Thank you. Thank you, Kokyo, very much for inviting me, and for those of you who supported my coming to give a talk tonight. I'm really enjoying being here at Santa Cruz Zendo. It's been quite a long time. In fact, it might have been Catherine's mountain seat ceremony. It's been really a long time. And it's good to see many people who I know and have practiced with, both at Green Gulch and Tassajara and other places. So thank you all for coming tonight. I was in the Dokusan room which was given to me as a changing room, and I saw this calligraphy hanging in the Dokusan room, and I thought, this is what I wanted to talk about tonight. And this is the character for the name of the character, Shin, heart or mind, heart mind, the Shingyo, the Heart Sutra. And it was calligraphed by Tanahashi-san, Kaz Tanahashi-san. Some of you may know him or have done workshops with him. Well-known calligrapher, peace worker. And so he did this particular heart, mind, shin character in rainbow colors. And I don't know exactly how he did it, dipping his brush probably in a whole bunch of different colors. And then, as you can see, it's so free and so relaxed. You know, the character Shin, if those of you know it, it's if you do it according to, like if you were being taught how to do it, it's boom, 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 like that. But this is like just free and alive and dynamic and loving. So the talk tonight, and I'll refer back to this because it so struck me when I saw it. I've been turning the teaching around faith in Buddhism, faith, and the character for faith is Shin also. So there's a poem called Faith in Mind, or the Faith in Mind inscription, or Trust in Mind, called the Shin Chin Ming. Some of you may have studied it. And it's in Sanskrit, the word is Shraddha, faith. And the Shin, it's a different Shin than this. There's a lot of words that have different characters, but the same sound. What are those? Homophones? Yeah. So this Sunday we woke up to horrific, terrible news that there was a tragedy in Orlando, and the killing of, they didn't know how many people at first, but 49 people we know, and the wounding of so many other people. And who was it who was targeted? Young, Latino, LGBT, people coming to a place of safety and fun and relaxation. So the shock of this, and how do we make sense of this? How do we integrate this level of, how do we apply our practice and our teaching to something like this? And where does faith, Shraddha, come in to this? Right now at City Center, 300 Page Street, Zen Center in the city, we have the rainbow banner hung. It's hung from the second floor right outside the Dokusan room, actually. And we hang it for Pride Week. And we hung it in honor of the many victims, for all of us who are suffering from this, the victims, the survivors, the families, the friends, the perpetrator, all beings deserve this compassion. All beings deserve this compassion. So seeing this rainbow heart, that's the kind of heart that we want, that includes everything and everyone. And it is, this heart-mind has no particular color or form, but includes all colors and all forms. So Shraddha, or Shin, the character for it is, it's got two parts to it. The left side is the character for person, and the right side is the character for word. So the etymology of the ideograph, or the when you look at it, you see person standing by their word. Is when you visualize, it means faith, trust, loyalty, confidence, fidelity. These are all different translations or definitions of that character, but the kind of pre-voice of it, or the etymology, is a person who stands by their word, or who walks the talk, is what I was thinking, who has the courage of their convictions. Is that that's a kind of trite, that's a little phrase, right? So how do we stand by the word, stand by the teaching, stand by the word of the Buddha as we go forward in the face of the unspeakable, you know, in the face of horrific events? Do we lose our faith, our trust? Does it strengthen? So Shraddha, or faith, is a necessary component for a lot of different things, different lists of powers, and it's necessary for the first two of the Eightfold Path, right view and right intention. One needs faith because one maybe doesn't have right view as we start out to practice. We're pretty confused. Or our intentions might be confused as well. So this is being able to find some trust in the teaching before we've found out for ourselves that it is efficacious, it meets us, it's beneficial in the world. But we hear it, we resonate with it, and we set forth. There's a kind of faith there. I think that everyone needs at the beginning. Or you don't set out. You don't start sitting. You don't start coming to a Dharma talk. So there's some kind of faith. But it's different than our usual understanding of faith, or maybe from our religion of origin, where it was faith in something. You're supposed to believe in something and take it on faith, or blind faith, or believe it because I said so, or it's written, or somebody, or it's tradition. And this is not the kind of, this is not Shraddha. Shraddha, it can start out more, maybe close to that, not blind, but not sure necessarily, but then we prove it for ourselves through our direct experience, our direct practice. There's a story of Tsultrim Alione. Maybe some of you know her. She's an American who's a Tibetan practitioner. And she was doing a pilgrimage in Tibet visiting a shrine for one of the Tibetan teachers, ancestor saints, and she was with a group of people, and they were heading on this pilgrimage. They got to this kind of raging river very near to this shrine that they were going to. And at that point, there was a lot of fear, like it was kind of wilderness, and how are we going to cross this? We might be swept away. And what Sultra Malione said is, in the middle of this kind of anxiety and fear, and they're trying to get to this shrine, she had a sense of faith arising in her as a relaxation, a relaxed trust that it will unfold, and I will be present and ready to respond in any way. It may not be what we thought we were going to do. We may not get there, but it was going to be okay. This trusting relaxation. And I found that a very useful way to think about Shraddha or faith and trust. There's a relaxation rather than, I don't know, a kind of anxious grasping after something outside ourselves. It's our own body mind that relaxes and is ready for anything. And ready for anyone. For anything and anyone to be our teacher, to hear the Dharma in anything and anyone. It's a kind of trust and faith there. It's interesting, the word Shraddha, the etymology of Shraddha in Sanskrit, Indo-European etymology, it shares the da part with an old word that means placing one's trust. And it's connected, that old word, an Indo-European word, is connected with, in Italian, credere, to believe, and cor, or cuore in Italian, corazon in Spanish. So Shraddha and corazon, or heart, actually, are connected linguistically. And of course, if they're linguistically connected, they're connected bodily and in our own consciousness. So for me, I think of faith or trust as, I connect it with heart, actually, and wholeheartedness, and courage. Cuore and corazón are connected with... let there be light. With having courage. That takes heart, taking heart. And we need heart. We need to take heart and find courage to face our world, face what happens, what we don't know will happen or not, to be ready, not with hypervigilance and anxiety and aversion, but with this relaxed trust that's not stupidity, you know, or ignorance, and everything's going to be all right kind of mind, but being able to be relaxed and ready for anything, I think is this faith, trust, confidence, Shraddha. So how do we respond to horror? Tragedy, prejudice, hatred, and to speech that conveys all those things. How do we respond without falling into the same pitfall, you know, the same kind of speech back at you, you know? How do we turn it in a dynamic way so we can see clearly. clearly observe how we really are together. At the beginning of ordination ceremonies, the Doshi says, invoking the presence and compassion of our ancestors, in faith that we are Buddha, we enter Buddha's way. And then after that comes paying homage to all the Buddhas and ancestors and Shakyamuni Buddha. But this phrase, in faith that we are Buddha, we enter Buddha's way. Trusting that we are Buddha nature, we enter the path of the Buddha, the path of awakened ones. And there's another place, there's a number of places where faith comes up, but another chant that we do regularly, maybe you do here, is the Ehe Koso Hotsu Ganmon, the vows of the high priest Dogen. And in that, these vows, it was originally I vow, and we've changed it slightly to we vow. And Dogen vowed with all sentient beings to see the true Dharma, that upon seeing it, no doubt would arise. And then at the, no doubt will arise in me, nor will I lack in faith. That's the opening of the vows. To vow to see the truth and to let go of the worldly affairs. Worldly affairs are the I, me, and mine, and right and wrong, and hatred, and all the dualistic stuff of our life that we encounter and have to meet and yet not be caught by it. Nor will I lack in faith, he says. And then at the end of this rather long, fervent kind of vows, do you chant it here?
Yes.
Yeah, so you know the chant. So at the end, you remember what it says. By revealing and disclosing my lack of faith and practice before the Buddha. We melt away. But before that, it says about confessing and repenting, right? By confessing and repenting my lack of faith before the Buddha, we melt away the root of transgression by the power of our confession and repentance, meaning acknowledging we lost this kind of relaxed trust that the teaching is unfolding. Whatever is happening, this is the teaching unfolding. Not that when something like this Orlando thing happens, it's not that that is the teaching of the Buddha. That's cruelty and hatred in action. What is the teaching is how we respond to that is where the teaching of the Buddha comes. How do we respond? There is the teaching. What does the teaching say about hatred? Not that those acts are the teaching of the Buddha. So confessing and repenting in this way, one never fails to receive profound help from all Buddhas and ancestors. By revealing and disclosing our lack of faith, one melts away the root of transgression. What's the root of transgression? It's our ignorance of how we actually exist together as one dynamic, unfolding intimacy. That's how we exist together, like that. And when we confess and repent that we're not living in that way, you know, it melts away the root of transgression by the power of acknowledging and admitting where we're at. This is the pure and simple color of the true mind of faith, of the true body of faith. I love that it says that. This is the pure and simple color. This is the color. And that color is all colors, is rainbow. This week I happened to open my computer And my homepage is the New York Times, and they were live streaming Muhammad Ali's funeral. I don't know if any of you saw it or listened to it. And I thought I'd watch it for a while. We don't have a TV, so it was like this thing that was on my computer. And I watched for about 3 hours. It was a long funeral. I couldn't, like, close down. It was so moving. And so, and just a few things. I mean, I grew up, Muhammad Ali is 5 years older than me, so I grew up with him as a presence in my, as many of you did. And I was thinking, it's not because he was a beautiful, graceful, athletic human being that, you know, that's never, that no one had ever seen the likes of before. And that he was a heavyweight champion for 3 times. And that's not why 20,000 people came to his funeral and lined the streets of Louisville, 15,000 people, as the cortege throwing roses. That was not why they were throwing roses, because he was a good boxer and went to that funeral and stood there. What I realized is he was honored and loved because he had the courage, the heart, to be who he was when it wasn't, when it was dangerous to speak the way he did, and where he lost everything, you know, when he refused to be drafted and they took the heavyweight championship away and they allowed him, you know, he couldn't box anymore. All these, he had that corazón, you know, he had the heart. And then that was the first part of his life, and then the comeback and the beauty of watching him. I've been watching these videos of his, the way he moved and all. But it was the second half of his life. After that, I think, if it was only that, I don't think there would have been thousands and thousands in the whole world mourning him. And it was his compassion and his kindness and his love for human beings. And they called him a man of faith. He was a man of faith. And he was Muslim. But his funeral, which he designed himself, he worked on it for years, I heard, was an interfaith event of high quality. You know, it had 2 rabbis and a Christian priest, Mormon, Muslim, of course. Then there was Native American, 3 Native Americans who spoke so beautifully. One in a Native American tongue, which I didn't catch which tongue it was, and another translation, and the dignity and the pace of the words, you know, was so beautiful. And the ritual costumes or ritual adornments. And then there was a Buddhist, they had a Buddhist, 2 Buddhist practitioners, monks, a man and a woman who were from Soga Gakkai, I think, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, chanters, peace pilgrims, who walk, you know, across the United States chanting the title of the Lotus Sutra, right? Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And they did it kind of in tandem. Did some of you see it? I don't know if some of you saw it. Chanting with the drumming, and playing off one another with this drumming, and it went on and on and on. I remember thinking, this is going on too long. It just kept going, but every, you know, as did the funeral, just kept going. One, and there was comedians and President Clinton and Obama, and the First Lady had a something read by Valerie Jarrett, and so he was a man of faith, and everyone, he really said and thought, everyone took different paths to the same source, and he wanted his funeral to express that, and it did so beautifully. There was one story that Billy Crystal, who was a friend of his from a long time, the comedian, told, which kind of exemplified for me Muhammad Ali in this heart. He And I'm not sure whether this was when he had Parkinson's or not. I actually was on an airplane with Muhammad Ali once. He was already with Parkinson's, so very slow. But the he was in economy, you know, flying economy somewhere by himself. It wasn't a big entourage or anything. He was just a civilian. But the kind of charisma, you know, even though he was very slowed down and all, people would come up and ask for autographs, and he patiently, you know. Anyway, but I saw it even then, you know, as an older person, sick. Anyway, Billy Crystal told the story of going with him to the Olympics and watching the boxing. I'm not sure what year this was, or, and the American boxer won the gold medal, and there was big celebrations and the medal and the Star Spangled Banner and the flags waving, and he participated, Muhammad Ali, and congratulated. And then he said to Billy Crystal, "I want to see the loser. Where's the loser?" And it's like, the loser? Who's thinking about the loser? But Muhammad Ali wanted to see the loser. So he found an Olympic attendant and who showed them where this boxer who had just lost was. I don't know what country he was from. And he was all by himself in the locker room with like a towel over his shoulder, bent down, you know, having just lost, you know, in the most, you know, a sad time in his life, having lost in front of the world, you know, this. And Muhammad Ali walks into the locker room. And he starts talking with him and saying, "You look really great out there. You have some great moves. You're going to go far." And sparring with him a little bit. And you can imagine what that was like to, at the depths of despair, to have Muhammad Ali come find you and tell you that you got it. You know, don't, I saw this and I saw that. And Billy Crystal said you could see him fill up again with his own, you know, courage and heart again. That little story, which I'd never heard before, is such a small thing, but who thinks of the loser and goes and finds them? And I think and there were all sorts of things that came up in the funeral about how he helped people in a very secret way, with nobody knowing, you know, supporting villages and just stuff. That's why 20,000 people line the streets, and for his loving kindness. And that's why, that's what is worthy of our honor and homage. And he was a man of faith, you know, but not the kind of blind faith and that we've got the right faith and you've got the wrong faith, but true, open, rainbow heart faith, Shraddha, Corazon. And it was so inspiring. It was just so inspiring. And then we have the uninspiring, you know. So, this, each one of us, in faith that we are Buddha, we enter Buddha's way. I think this is, you know, the Lotus Sutra. This is Lotus Sutra teaching. In faith that we are Buddha, we enter Buddha's way. Lotus Sutra is all beings, without exception. This is also other teachings, but are on the path, are potential awakened beings, have the nature of awakenedness. And everyone's in a different place and on the path, just like the chapter in the Lotus Sutra where the Dharma rain comes down. Those of you who know the Lotus Sutra, and the big trees drink up what they need and the little grasses drink what they need and the shrubs and the flowers. Everybody takes what they need and grows according to their own, where they're at on the path. In faith that we are Buddha. And in chapter 10 of the Lotus Sutra, it talks about it's Teachers of the Dharma is the name of the chapter. And it talks about who teaches the Dharma. And it basically is saying, it's open who can teach the Dharma. It's not reserved for people, for certain people who are wearing certain color robes, and all of us can be teachers for one another, and everyone can be a teacher for us. And I think we know that. People have done things without having any idea that that came in very strongly and struck us as beautiful and helped us. So we can be teachers for others without even knowing it, and others, animate and inanimate objects, can be teachers for us. And there's, in this same chapter, Medicine King Buddha, and I think the fact that it's Medicine King, medicine, this is Dharma as medicine, says those who want to teach the Dharma must go into the room of the Tathagata, the Thus Come One, the Buddha, wrap themselves in the robe of the Buddha, and sit on the seat of the Buddha. And then, to make no mistake about what Medicine King is saying, he says, the room of the Buddha is great compassion. You step into the room of great compassion. The robe of the Buddha is gentleness and patience and forbearance. You wrap yourself in the robe of gentleness, patience, tolerance, forbearance. That's the robe of the Buddha. And you sit on the seat of contemplating the emptiness of all things. That's the seat of the Buddha. And that is our seat. That can be our seat, wrapped in gentleness and forbearance, in the room of compassion. And in that way, we teach Dharma. We teach truth, Buddha's teaching, Buddha Dharma, awakened teaching, which has no form or color, and has all forms and all colors. So we can't pull out one or the other, which is how I think of this character. It's all colors and no colors, no form or color, nothing to grasp. I do want to leave room for questions. There's so much, as I've been turning this, finding, what does Suzuki Roshi say about faith? There's a great lecture where I think he's talking about the Lotus Sutra, that we must have great faith and strength of faith. And a student says, well, how do you acquire great faith? And then Suzuki Roshi says, faith, it's not a good word. Why? Because I think we immediately feel like it's faith in something outside of ourselves. And that's not what he's talking about. So he tries his best to get to what he's really talking about. And the student doesn't understand, and he gives it another try. But basically, what Suzuki Roshi ends up saying is, eyes cannot see eyes. He brings up non-duality, basically. That faith is, and then he just says, this is it. Suchness, it's in faith that we are Buddha, it's not outside ourselves, it's our birthright, who we are, in faith that we are Buddha and have awakened nature. Not faith in something else, or faith in, we can have faith in Buddha's teaching, but what is Buddha's teaching? Buddha's teaching is there's nothing to transmit. You are just this person. And in faith that you are. So, it's a fun lecture if you ever want. I have the excerpts of it. It's, I think from 72 or 69. Anyway, and he also says, I try not to use the word faith because we misunderstand. Yeah. I think the last part of that lecture, the student finally says, so I have faith in you as my teacher, and I have faith in my mother, and I have faith, but that's not what you're talking about, right? Suzuki Roshi says, yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. And then that's when he says, and then the student says, so it's all Buddhist teaching, even if I fall down and break my leg? And Suzuki Roshi said, yes, even if you die, that's our awakened nature. And I think that was his teaching. So, in faith that we are Buddha, that kind of trusting, relaxed, this is our life together. And sitting with that in our posture, that kind of open, relaxed trust. So maybe that's all for what I wanted to bring up tonight. And if you have any questions or anything you would like to bring up or ask about or add. Yes?
So just to add about Muhammad Ali, you know, Tiger Blake used him as one of the archetypes.
Is he in Bodhisattva archetypes?
I think he's actually Shakyamuni, compared to Shakyamuni.
Uh-huh.
And if he's not, you know, Tiger sort of looks at the qualities of the human.
Yeah.
Compares them to one of our,
yes,
one of our Buddhist saints, one of our Buddhist archetypes.
Yes, yes.
He does a very good job.
Yeah, I'll have to read that. I didn't remember that. I've read the book, but a while ago. Yeah, thank you, Patrick. Yes?
Can you say more about eyes cannot see eyes?
Yes. So, my understanding of what Suzuki Roshi was trying to illustrate was non-duality, basically. So we have our eyes and they look out and we think we see objects out there. And we do. We're not negating that you're over there and I'm here. But he's saying that capacity of seeing and functioning and the essence of our full functioning, we can't grasp that or get at that or see that. That's who we are. That is our nature. And it's in a dance with, you know, it's big mind and small mind. Is what he, also in this lecture, he brings up having faith that you are surrounded. He says surrounded, that you are sitting in it and are it. You know, this, what he calls big mind, that has no form or color. So, and you can't, whatever you see out there is it, and you can't somehow see the subject of that. It's all subject. So that's a little bit more about my understanding of what he's, you can look in a mirror at your eyes, I don't think it's that, but our eyes do not see our eyes, they see so-called out there. But everything we see is big mind. Yeah.
One little note, as you were speaking about the difficulty of translating the word that we call faith or confidence and its importance, I thought of the French term, which in a secular way one may say to a person in need of faith or in need of some encouragement, one says courage.
Courage.
Which is very much like, yeah, what you were saying earlier with Corazon and with the, you know,
courage.
Courage.
Meaning take courage, take.
Yes.
Yes, the same.
But mm-hmm. It's there within us. We may have forgotten.
Yeah.
But courage, and it brings it to us.
Yes, yes. Well, and we can help each other that way. And that's encouraging others, you know? And in fact, you know, when we're sitting, it takes courage to sit upright. You know, the tendency to protect the heart and the heart chakra and to fold down like this, to actually be able to open to our life in this area and relax, talk about relax the shoulders. It's faith, actually. It's the body of faith, dropping the shoulders away from the ears. To be able to do that let that happen, allow that, is body and mind of faith, I think, in the body, in the posture itself. So when we're taught our Zazen posture, you know, Zazen instruction, first day you ever got it, it described that, and taking that form, as we know, when you take a form, you feel the form, what the form is helping us to feel in our bodies. And sometimes if I'm doing posture suggestions and someone's, if I touch their back, you know, how that, and, you know, right kind of straight behind there, someone may just burst into tears, right? Just because they've been holding and not wanting to feel. So, and I imagine each of you might have a story about that, you know, actually allowing yourself to be who you are and feel your life posturally. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been really thinking about what you said, that when really horrific things happen, like say the massacre, and when Buddhists say things like, you know, everything is the teaching, how sometimes people think, as you said, that means that the teaching is that the massacre happened. And I'm really appreciating your pointing out and clarifying that the teaching is our response. And just now I'm realizing what you said, and our response may be profound grieving,
yes,
profound anger.
Yes.
You know, and somehow there's this thing we get into, I think, sometimes with the teachings of the Buddha, because there's this emphasis on calmness and equanimity and forgiveness and compassion, that we misunderstand, I believe, we misunderstand that somehow excludes that the response might also be an emotional just reaction.
Yes.
And that is the teaching. And I'm just wanting to kind of check with you on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have these Dharma teachings that can be used, spiritual bypassing, you know, that phrase where you take a Dharma phrase like accept, you know, full accept, as if, and then that skirts you away from actually your full response or feeling your feelings thoroughly, and then working with that within the teaching, it kind of pushes you into a side, you know, and to say, like this person is saying, so if you break your leg, that's the teaching too. Someone could misunderstand that as the teaching is that cruelty is the teaching, or bad, painful things, or getting cancer is the teaching. And I think that, you're right, that's, it's, can we study it as the causes and conditions? And this thing in Orlando, what are the causes and conditions? How have we participated by not pressuring, I mean, there's these political responses, there's the community, you know, supporting LGBT in any way, community in any way we can, there's speaking out when we hear someone do racial slurs, or the response to these things is to look at, am I standing by my word, you know, am I entrusting myself to the teaching and being upright in all ways? So it's, and if we study causes and conditions, we see that we're involved too, you know, the, by omission or by our lack of actions or lack of faith, or, so that's where, and then why would someone do something like this, you know? This is a, we come to greed, hate, and delusion as the center. Hatred. Who knows? Delusion. You know, that's, those are the actions coming from a mind filled with suffering and hate. A suffering mind is a hateful mind is a suffering mind. So you can apply the teachings, but not say like, this is the teaching of the, you know, this is, you use the teachings to study endlessly our life, and it takes courage, actually. And the feelings that come up of anger and mourning and outrage, how do you You know, there's a story of Thich Nhat Hanh during the Vietnam War. You may know the story. He was giving a lecture about what was going on in his country, and this person in the audience got up and started haranguing him and saying, what are you doing here? You should be back in your country, and who do you think you are, and all this. And the anger that Thich Nhat Hanh felt, this rage, this boiling rage, just like rose up in him, you know, and he knew, and this is, I think, in terms of the teaching, that he knew if he were to vent that, he'd lose everybody, he'd lose the audience, and he waited. And what did he say? Stayed with his breath, waited till he could, you know, with mindfulness, speak to this person. But it wasn't that he didn't feel it, or that, oh, Thich Nhat Hanh is a saint and he never feels anger. That's not the case. How do we transform it, transmute it, straw into gold? You know, how do we turn that into energy of skillful means, you know. So I think that's all of our, that's for all of us to work with. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Liz?
It does seem like part of the courage is to stay with not knowing of location. It's so hard to be with those strong emotions and be mindful. But when a tragedy like this happens, I feel like part of the confusion that arises in me is, what do I do? What can I do? What should I do? And kind of the answers that come is, well, I can just be in my life. My life is not in Florida, but there's plenty of pain and hate here. I found my response was, just trying to connect more directly with people and smile and have an open heart the last couple of days.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And, you know, there are opportunities all over if we're present to bias and unconscious bias and discrimination, implicit bias in all these different realms.
Yes.
That to be more and more and more awake to that. And then there's, you know, there's the fact, and I've felt this in a number of times, where, you know, the coming together after a tragedy among people and communities is so strong and so powerful. Not that I wouldn't, you know, I would never go so far as to say it. It's not like anything's worth a terrible thing happening, but people do come together for change after these things happen. I was thinking about something that just arose actually when I was in the Doksan room waiting to come here, which was in the 70s when, you know, the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, written by Robert Persick. His son, Chris, was living at Zen Center, was a student at Zen Center, and he was young. He was like 18 or something, and he was murdered on Haight Street, one block away from Zen Center, and found, he had been stabbed, and we found him, you know. And all these people from Zen Center came and made a circle around him. I remember that, waiting for the police to come and just like forming this circle. And one person said, and it sounds kind of dissonant in some way, but he said, why can't things always be like this, is what he said. And I think what he meant with was not that Chris had been killed, but we were like this we were together in a way we had never been before. This loving, bonded, mourning group of Dharma friends, you know, like solid. And that's what that person said, which, So that can happen. It's almost the karmic fruit of great loss. It can be great coming together. Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you all very much. Maybe we should end. I just wanted to dedicate tonight's talk and the positive energy that we've created together in listening and bringing up these issues and hearing the Dharma and thinking about it, reflecting on it, that creates wisdom. May it be spread out in the 10 directions, and especially may this positive energy and loving energy, compassionate energy be sent to all those who are suffering from the, which is countless beings, but especially the family and friends of the victims and survivors of the Orlando massacre. And I include in that the perpetrator and the perpetrator's family and friends. Yeah. Thank you very much.